Hi, Sue Hall here. Welcome to the seventh podcast in our fourth series of Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. On March 27th, 2021, TEDx Bear Creek Park live streamed 12 talks, and I was privileged to be one of the speakers. Today, I am delighted to introduce a whirlwind, Di Manuel, an MC, fitness and lifestyle coach, event speaker, toastmaster, convention blogger, radio host, and his introduction in itself is exhausting. So welcome, Di.
Sue, it's so great to see you again. Can you believe it's been 2 months to the day that we took the TEDx stage?
Is it really?
It's the 27th today.
Oh, yeah. It is. It seems like a whole year, doesn't it?
It's incredible how much has gone on in just 2 months. If there's some days where I feel like, yeah, it was like yesterday, right? And then there's other days where it feels like a year ago. Yeah, it's wild, huh?
So much has happened. Your energy alone is contagious. So we must warn the listeners that we may have to nap halfway through. But we'll start with the fact that we met over Zoom. We practiced our talks. And what struck me was the title of your talk, Vulnerability is a Human Thing. And you totally walk your talk. So why did you want to talk about vulnerability?
Well, let's just jump right in. vulnerability, if I'm perfectly honest, it's a term that I always perceived as being very negative, like a weakness, you know, just vulnerability. Whoa, that's not good. Because we often hear about vulnerability in systems, and that usually means, you know, there's an opportunity for something bad to happen. So why would I want my life to have any vulnerability in it? No. And when I think back to my upbringing, you know, I'm now 44 years young and I've done a few things in my life and had a few experiences. And I think back to some of those experiences and some of the most challenging times of my life, they were very isolating times. You know, like when you're dealing with struggles, I mean, yeah, just look at birds, look at dogs, look at cats, look at just the animal kingdom, right? Any species pretty much other than human beings. And when you watch animals, when they become injured, they typically retract or regress into a more primitive version of itself. You know, it isolates it, and I hate to say it, but I mean, you see a maimed animal, often it retracts and hides and eventually passes on. And when I think about what was role modeled in my life and some of the actions I would take when I was faced with really hard choices, most of the time it was me bringing myself to those situations. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But, you know, it felt very lonely. Like there would be nobody there in the world that would understand what I'm going through, wouldn't be able to relate. And why would I want to share this with anybody? Because they might see it as a weakness, see it as an opportunity to take advantage of me, maybe use what I share against me. So, you know, these are all the little things, the dialogues that are going on in my head when I'm dealing with struggles or tough situations. And I learned very early on the best way to deal with a lot of those ugly, negative, or some people will call it, you know, that negative self-talk in our minds. I learned I could push it to the side with certain influences, particularly drinking alcohol, and occasionally some narcotic use, you know, and other ways of distracting myself or just trying to avoid looking at the issue. You know, like even acknowledging that it's there, it was a lot easier just to push it off, distract myself, so I just didn't have to deal with it in the moment. And, you know, you can learn to function to a certain level doing that. Yeah. But yeah, there eventually comes a point where it's just exhausting and things just, well, they just eventually won't work. You know, my life stopped working. And that's where I became much more open to this idea of being able to share and express actually what I'm going through. And this act of vulnerability actually became a very big strength in my life and helped me through a lot of challenging situations and has made my life so much better. So that sort of encaptures vulnerability, but why I felt the passion to share about it was it's made such a big difference in my life over the last, I'd say, decade. And especially with other men, because I find that other men, they deal with much the same ideology and belief systems that I had before I adopted a skill of vulnerability into my life. And I do call it a skill. So sort of leave it at that and throw it back to you right now, Sue.
Well, that is so beautiful. And I think it's okay for me to repeat this because it's now in your TED Talk. But your wife sort of brought you to that point where you realized it wasn't working with what I think is the most epic question I've ever heard anybody ask. She just said to you, are you being the man that you would like your daughters to marry?
Yeah.
I just thought that was the most epic question in the whole world.
Yeah. And to be honest and completely transparent, I think a lot of us, especially myself, you know, if I speak to this from the I perspective, you know, my perspective, I'm inviting those that are listening to just self-reflect as I share this, because I think more of us share this in common than don't. The issue itself and the challenges I was not dealing with, there were signs. There was plenty of signs along the way that things weren't working, that things could, in essence, be better if I chose to do things differently than I was doing it. And I bring this up because, you know, even from the early days in my teen years, you know, one of the first big challenging periods of my life was during the age of 9 to 14, where I was learning to console myself. And again, similarly to how I found alcohol later in life, and obviously there's a pattern here, I learned to distract myself and avoid certain challenging feelings or acknowledging how I'm feeling or how I like to be feeling, and, you know, basically feeling like I was stuck. And I would avoid the pain associated with even acknowledging that with food. That's how I coped. Food, video games, and movies. And you can imagine, you know, a lifestyle of doing that every day, it has a negative compounding effect. So over that 5-year period, I got bigger and bigger, to the point where my doctor pulled my mom aside one day, 14 years old, going in to get my breathing check because I had asthma, which was getting really, really bad based on my unhealth. And he pulled my mom aside and said, "Betty, yeah, your son died. He's morbidly obese." And now me not having any sort of clue at the age of 14, I didn't know what morbidly meant. I didn't know what obese meant, but I figured two words I don't understand side by side, that's doubly bad, you know?
They don't sound good.
It doesn't sound good. And here I was, you know, faced with a situation where, again, I was feeling really alone. I was isolating. I was definitely dealing with a lot of negative self-opinions and self-esteem issues. And, you know, when we see people in massive states of unhealth, a lot of these things that I'm sharing, it's just like, yeah, of course you feel that way. It seems that everybody feels that way when they get to that sort of place. But yet, it didn't feel like a cliche. That was my life, you know? Like, it was just, this is my situation. And so, it's funny, I worked through that and made some big, big, big changes. You know?
Well, for those who are listening and obviously haven't seen you, I have to tell everybody, you are now the epitome of an extremely fit person.
Well, thank you, Sue. That's very kind of you to say. I have a very active lifestyle, or at least try to be active. I make very specific decisions every day, choices, you know, to try to keep myself in a good place, because it makes me feel better too, right? Like, if I'm eating certain types of foods, I'm doing a certain amount of activity every day, I'm practicing some self-care habits.
Well, you're my hero for several reasons, because I happen to know that there is a book called Di Emanuel's Whole Life Fitness Manifesto, 30 minutes a day for a healthier body, mind, and spirit. And I happen to watch a few of your little videos, one particularly about the keto diet. And you are my hero because I can have bacon on the keto diet. I mean, my day doesn't start without bacon. I mean, and so for somebody to say that I could eat healthy and include it, then I'm sorry, but you're on my Christmas card list.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And, you know, full disclosure, I did a media tour across Canada where I was just being invited to come on local morning media to talk about how to lose weight on the bacon diet. Now, of course, I was very tongue in cheek, more of a soundbite than anything. And often they would ask me, "Are you serious? You're going to come on and speak on live morning television that people can lose weight by eating bacon?" And I'm like, well, sort of. And yeah, if people that are familiar with the ketogenic diet, it sort of plays to that. But of course, there has to be certain lifestyle habits along with the nutrition choices. And I do want to have that full disclosure, because if you just eat bacon, yikes, I can't say that the results will be positive. Okay.
No, just a little bit each morning is just fine with me.
I love it.
That is so much fun. But you have done quite a lot of work in terms of working out a way to be when it comes to food.
Yeah. You know, like anything, it's a relationship. A relationship with self, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's that self-accountability that at the end of the day, no one forces us to eat. For the most part, we have freedom of choice, a free will. And we have lots of opportunities to make decisions. And we can choose to make different decisions than we've done in the past based on some of the experiences that are helping form our beliefs. And what I mean by this is, even just a simple exercise, and this is something I'd like to invite people to do, is just don't worry about creating the food journal. Food journals, I do that with some clients, but I'll tell you, the adherence is very low and the ability to actually follow through and to document everything that we put in our mouth, it's not the simplest of tasks, you know, because it's just not front of mind unless we're really, really focused on it. So what I rather invite people to do is for at least a week, every time that you eat something, check in with yourself 30, 60, and 90 minutes after you eat. And it's just a simple little thing, just a simple check-in to say, hey, how am I feeling right now? Do I still feel really good? Do I feel sustained? Do I feel energized? Do I feel like I'm just in a good place? Or do I feel like, oh, it's nap time, or I need a double-double for those that are in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. Along with maybe a pastry or something of those sorts, right? Like, and a lot of people are familiar with that sort of mid-afternoon lull or that mid-morning lull. And it's usually affected by some previous decisions. You know, it affects our blood sugar levels, which affects our energy and affects how we show up and do things and how we think and feel. And so just starting to develop a relationship with oneself and your relationship with food, it's such a wonderful place to begin. Very simple to do if you're prepared to do it, you know, and that's usually what I like people to do is just, hey, get to know the food that you're eating, get to know how it makes you feel, how it either creates certain types of results or maybe hinders certain type of results that you're wanting, because that's a wonderful place to begin.
I heard that it was a good idea to boost your immune system, besides the vitamin D and everything, is to have only 6 to 8 hours a day where you eat. Say you went from 10 till 6, but you don't eat anything before 10 and you don't eat anything after 6. And apparently that gives you this fasting thing. And it was so funny the other day because I thought, okay, I'll do this for a day and just see how I feel, right? So it's 9:30 in the morning and I'm hungry. This was my piece of bacon. It was the last ration in the packet. I was on my way to the stove, right? And I get to the stove and there's only the plastic wrapper. And I'm thinking, what happened to the bacon? And it must have fallen out. And I saw it disappearing down my dog's throat. The universe is not on my side here. Look, I said 10 o'clock, right? And it says it's only 9:30.
I love it. And intermittent fasting, it can be very beneficial. But again, there's sort of differing opinions out there.
Yeah.
But I am a fan of intermittent fasting. There's been periods of my life that I will practice that. And I've seen some wonderful benefits from that too, especially if people struggle with just this sort of erratic blood sugar. Yeah. Now, if you're diabetic, definitely consult to a health professional, you know, your doctor and nutritionist, someone that's got experience with this, because for you, intermittent fasting may not be the best of choices if you're a diabetic. But for most people, you know, it's a wonderful way to sort of do a hard reset metabolically. Oh, okay. But it is challenging, especially the first week or two, just because it's such a change in habits. It's just habit. Like we're so accustomed, we're conditioned to eating on a certain schedule for the most part. And anything that disrupts that can throw us off, right? It does. Like anything, it's a pattern interrupt. And it's like, you know, it creates a little bit of angst, but, you know, stick it out and you'll notice some really powerful benefits.
Absolutely. Well, let's get back to the TEDx. I know you're involved in Toastmaster and we have to congratulate you because you have recently won a Toastmasters award. Am I correct?
I achieved my DTM, which is Distinguished Toastmaster designation, be a couple of years now, but recently I was acknowledged in the Toastmaster publication that goes out to all the Toastmasters of the world. And I was recognized for just how I tell a story through social. Specifically, they highlighted my Instagram account. And I often share personal anecdotes and will pose certain types of questions to try to invite people to maybe just look at things a little bit differently. It's not really meant to be rhetorical. I really do hope that people read it. Yeah, they highlighted myself and a number of other Toastmasters that really just embrace social to promote the benefits of what we've acquired through that organization. And it's a wonderful organization, to be honest. The license holder for our event, you know, Alan Warburton, he was the first DTM that I had the privilege of seeing speak when I first went to Toastmasters. And I remember going to that very first meeting, being very intimidated, walking in there. There was 30 people in that room. It was an early edition Toastmasters. That was what the club was called. They met Monday mornings at 6:30 a.m. Whoa. Okay. And so you can imagine walking into this room of 30 positive folks. You know, you've been around the Toastmasters, you've met some of them, like they're very engaging. They're all just vibrating at a different level. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. Cause you can't help it. You pick up on that energy. You either like it or you're never coming back. Right. Like it's one or the other. And I liked it. And Alan spoke that meeting and I had an opportunity to see him speak. And I was like, whoa, wow. That is exactly why I'm here. I want to be like him. And then, you know, full circle, almost 11 years later, reconnected with Alan upon my return to Canada. And here he is running this TEDx event and being extended the invitation to apply like a number of other people did. And so it was just really interesting to see how that full circle has come about. And you just never know, never know.
But what drew you there in the first place? When you saw him and you said, that's what I want to be like, what was it that you saw that you wanted to be like?
Well, a nice little side story. So that was the Monday. The Friday before that Monday, so literally just 3 days before, I was part of a mastermind group of a number of guys that were similar in my age. We were all sort of late 20s to mid 30s, all entrepreneurial. And we would meet once a month to just connect, network, share best practices. It was just a wonderful time. And occasionally we would invite a guest speaker to speak to our group about some topic that we've all said is important to us. So we wanted to bring someone in that knew something about public speaking. Because if I'm perfectly honest with you, and this is something that stemmed from the time when I was a teenager all the way through well into my adult years, and even today, I still deal with this occasionally, is a little bit of social angst. You know, one-to-one, no problem. One to a couple, I'm okay. As soon as I get to one-to-many, it's not so easy. I feel a lot of, because I'm naturally introverted. I am. I'm naturally, 80% of my time is spent very much introverted, just being very private, being with my family. Yet I choose very much so to really lean into that other 20% to be more extroverted because I knew that I had a story to tell, but more than that, I wanted to help people. And I knew the best way to do that was to get out there and connect with them and share. And that scared me. And after I saw this gentleman come in and speak to our group, and he captured us, you know, I think there was 13 or 14 of us in that room, and all of us were just locked on him for the 30 minutes that he talked to us, like absolutely just locked in and just, wow. And he was probably in his late 50s, I imagine, and he'd been speaking for a good chunk of his life, even a published author on a public speaking book as well. And I was just like, wow. So after this, I was like, I want to be able to do more of that. I approached him after his talk and after meeting with us. And I was just like, hey, so I want to be able to do what you just did for us. What's the best first step for me? And all he said to me, Toastmasters. and as soon as he said that, I went home and I Googled Toastmasters in White Rock because I was living out in South Surrey, White Rock area. And that was the club that popped up. 6:30 in the morning was definitely free. There's no excuse that wouldn't work with my schedule. And so literally I signed up to be a guest. So Friday, I got inspired. I took immediate action, showed up on Monday, and I was just like, I'm doing this. I signed up that first meeting and committed to be a member of the club and just kept showing up Monday after Monday after Monday. And that's how it started, you know, and this is like going on just over 11 years now.
And wow, I had no idea.
Yeah. The cool thing is with Toastmasters, I equate it to golf. You know, you could travel the world, play golf pretty much in any place that there's a golf course, right? And you can always connect with like-minded individuals that love that sport. Well, Toastmasters is that place to practice not only your leadership skills, but your ability to speak and connect and communicate, and in a very safe and a very friendly place, you know, and you end up meeting just wonderful people. As my family and I were traveling the world for almost 5 years, we went to lots of different Toastmasters clubs because it was just a great way to meet people. And when we lived in Bali for a couple of years during those travels, there was 4 Toastmasters groups I had the privilege of being a member of.
That's so funny.
It was super cool because it was just a wonderful community of both the mix of Indonesian locals, expats, and tourists. People are just coming and going and visiting clubs on the fly. So I loved it. It was a nice social opportunity for me to connect with people, make new friends, as well as practice a skill.
I wouldn't have thought of that, to be honest, that there would have been that opportunity. Like you say, an international club.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That it's really cool. A lot of people that I've worked with over the years, either as clients or just as people have reached out with questions, often I really speak a lot to the power of community,
right?
And more specifically, the power of feeling like you belong somewhere. It's one thing to join a club, but to feel like you belong to a club, that's a very different place to be. And I always invite people, I'm like, you know, Toastmasters are great, like, you will grow personally, professionally, you'll learn new skills, you make new friends, you will be challenged and put way outside your comfort zone. Get ready. But it's a nice, fun place to do it. It's a fun place to make mistakes and learn. And I don't know of too many places that I can say that about.
That's true. The title of it, I think, is something that would probably scare me. In other words, like when you're proposing a toast at a function, You're standing behind this white covered table, and you've got a drink in your hand, and you're standing in front of people you probably don't know, and you're trying to say something really nice, you know, to propose this toast. It brings up a scary picture to me, and you get that feeling in your stomach, and you think, oh gosh, I'm going to make a fool of myself. Do they give you sort of instruction? Do they just throw you in at the deep end?
They have a beautiful curriculum, and it's really go at your own pace. And often most clubs, they tend to follow a program called Pathways, which has been put together by Toastmasters. And Toastmasters has been around a really long time. And they've evolved and grown over the years and improved on their systems as well as their curriculums. And this new curriculum that they launched almost 2 years ago, it's quite in-depth, but it allows you to also specialize, meaning that if you're someone that's more attracted to being able to tell a story, they have a curriculum or a path for you to do that. If you want to do more media type of broadcast or speaking, they have a path for that. If you're someone that's an entrepreneurial and you want to do more things for your own business, they have a path for that. So it's a lot like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
So you can get the support and the teaching, leadership, really, and mentorship in an area that's relevant to you and where you want to go without your goals. But at the end of the day, it's really just comes down to becoming a more effective communicator, while also developing some amazing leadership qualities. That's what you're taking away more than anything. It's just a wonderful organization. Had I not said yes to myself to lean way outside of my comfort zone and say yes to challenging that fear I had of public speaking and speaking in groups, I can honestly say that you and I would have never met. I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. I know this.
I'd love to get to the traveling part, but I just have one more question about the leadership skills.
Yeah.
The thing that I've noticed for having done a TEDx talk for myself is that I just feel a little bit more confident that whatever I'm going to say, people might actually enjoy. Do you know what I mean? And because you get the nice comments from your peers, it just gives me that little tiny bit of oomph that, okay, rather than keep quiet this time, I just think I might say something and it might go down well and it might help people. Do you find that's where the leadership comes from, the confidence?
I think it definitely plays into it. It's that self-confidence I think we're all looking for. And I often look to two things. It's clarity and confidence, right? Like when we get clear on a process for developing a skill, it gives us confidence in the actions to take.
I'm going to have to think about that one. Say that again.
Yeah. So think about this. Like clarity creates confidence.
Yeah.
Once we have confidence, it's a lot easier to then take very purposeful action. And I find a lot of the times we sort of skip over the part of getting really clear on why we're doing certain things. Why do we start certain things? Like, without clarity on that, we may not feel very confident about what we're doing or the types of action we're doing because we're not clear on why we're even starting or why is this even important to us? And so I always like to start from a place of clarity. And after you got those two pieces in check, it's pretty easy to narrow down the next step of actions. And when I'm coaching or mentoring people or clients, like, you got to start from clarity first. Let's get a lot of clarity. Let's get really clear on what it is you're wanting long-term and short-term. Because once we have that clarity, you gain confidence. I don't use the term easy because I think that gets misinterpreted and overplayed, but it definitely becomes simpler.
Right.
You know, simpler. Yeah. And every step of the way, you know, as clarity is gained, you know, the confidence goes up. And now that you've done it and you can celebrate that you just did it, there's you know, the next step actions, I feel at times become much more clear, right? It's just like, okay, well, now that I've done that, I know I can do this again. I think most people, and because I definitely feel like this at times and have felt like this in the past, and I have to remind myself, all of us have just so much potential in us, so much potential. And much of it goes unrealized, undiscovered even, not tapped into. And I find that a lot of that has to do with lack of clarity and lack of confidence in oneself. And so if you can really get those two, it just unlocks a lot of that potential. And man, once that starts picking up steam, watch out. Because then everything's possible. And it's a much more fun place to be when you're learning something new is to feel like, I've got this. I can do this. It may not go as well as I imagine it, but I can do it nonetheless, and I'm resilient and I'm going to make it through.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's just hearing your own voice saying it. I was having a conversation with somebody recently and they were saying, well, I'm not sure what I can really contribute to this. And I said, well, why did you want to become a Davis facilitator, right? Mm. And so she just went off into why she became one and all the things that had led up to it. And I said, well, there you are. I said, that's what you have to offer. But until she heard herself say it, she didn't think she had it.
It's so funny, right? But I think we can all relate to that. Now, on some level, there's a lot of power in that spoken word. And then to go down one step further and share it with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. So come on, traveling. I love traveling. Where did you go? Why did you go?
Well, I became clear that the path I was on at that time was not the path that was going to allow me to achieve certain goals. When I say goals, really, I just had a vision for what I wanted my life to look like. Mm-hmm. And I realized the path that I was on wasn't going to allow for that, at least not in the time frame that I wanted. And so let me give it a little bit of context here. I was a co-founder for a retail operation called Fitness Town, and it's a retail operation all across Canada, you know, predominantly West Coast Canada, but with digital means today, we're everywhere, or at least when I was there, I was everywhere. And, you know, I loved that industry because it was a nice way to serve people. But at the same time, I felt like my entrepreneurial spirit was being fully exercised. I really enjoyed it. It provided my family and I lots of wonderful opportunities. I learned a lot, provided us a great lifestyle. I really don't have a lot of negatives to say, with the exception, as we challenge ourselves to grow. And for those that haven't heard the TEDx talk, there was a big change that came from that question. And it put me in a place where all of a sudden this new trajectory I found myself on was a lot of self-education, a lot of self-development, not just professional development, which was always my focus. I was always chasing the title, chasing that certain stuff. My ego was driving a lot of my decisions. Let me just be honest, okay? It was all ego-based. I was driven by ego. And then this shift started to happen as I became more and more dissatisfied and disillusioned with my own life. And that was when my alcohol consumption started to increase drastically. Things were falling apart. Meanwhile, trying to keep up with appearances, making sure that people didn't know that about me. So isolating again, even myself and my own family who were bearing witness to a lot of these challenges. And I won't go through all that because there's a reason to watch the TEDx talk to hear a bit about that story. But after going through some of those changes and starting to realize that my perspective was growing, because I was growing now as a person again, becoming much more self-aware and self-actualized, meaning that I was really starting to align with this desire to want to make a greater impact on the world. Not about me anymore, not even about we, but about all of us. It's sort of like going from the arms crossed across the chest and now opening my arms to hug everybody. I wanted to really hug everybody. I wanted to help. I wanted to support. I wanted to create a bit of a legacy as well. And I realized that the path I was on wasn't going to allow me to check off a lot of the boxes of the things that I really wanted to do. And so as exciting as it was to think about all these things that I wanted to accomplish and do, it was also one of the most scariest moments of my life where I realized, my gosh, this thing I've been building for the last 17 years, thinking that this was my life's path, may not be my path anymore. And it's like, oh boy, you know, what am I going to do? And that's my scary wife, I got to give it up to her again. Christy is very wise. She kept dripping on me these little podcasts or occasional articles or social media posts of families that basically quit their jobs, figured out ways to make a little bit of money online, downsized their lifestyle a little bit so they could upside their experience, right? Upsize opportunities to experience more things as a family. And I was like, at first I was like, you're crazy. We can't do that. But pull the kids out of school, go traveling, give away. No way. That is nuts. There's no way in heck we're going to do that. And she just kept dripping on me. She wasn't shutting down because she was listening to these all the time while she was working at her job. And so she was becoming more and more inspired. Her belief kept going up. Her confidence kept going up as she was getting clear on different ways that people were doing this.
Nice.
I wasn't open to it. So I wasn't at the same place. She had patience. She saw me growing so much because of those changes I had made. And I eventually warmed up to the idea. And I got to the point where I was like, you know what? You're right. One of the things, Sue, that was on my vision board was I wanted to do a TED Talk. That was one of the things, you know, that was one of the things, literally for 7 years, looking at my screensaver, it was one of the blocks on my vision board. And along with a number of other things, like travel the world, be a full-time family, like experience new things, have our kids become more global citizens.
Yeah.
And we realized that through travel, that was a wonderful way to expose them to those types of ideas and cultures, places, people, things. And so that happened. Literally, I gave almost a year and a half's notice because I knew that making that shift away was going to be a bit of a hole in the company because I was a fairly integral piece of it. And, but this is also my ego saying, I'll be honest, now looking back on it, I'm like, you know what? Everybody was replaceable. I wasn't that special, you know? And it's funny how we think that, right? Especially as a man, the conversation I've had with other men around this now, a lot of us are making a lot of our decisions based on ego.
Well, you're the providers, right?
Well, yeah, hunter-gatherers, the providers. We like to think of ourselves as that. And I certainly did at times. And I thought myself just so much more important than I was, which is just amazing. Now, I mean, I'm just not attached to any of that stuff anymore. But I mean, at the time, it was really hard to work through this stuff. So yeah, I made that decision. And then a month after I left my career, my wife quit hers. A few months after that, we pulled the kids out of school. We literally gave away all our stuff, subletted at our place, packed up what we could in our suitcases and fit them in the SUV, and everything else went into either a storage unit or gave away. And we just started driving south. We just said, we got to go where it's sunny and warm because it was January. Okay, we're getting out of Dodge. We both want the sunshine. And my father had been dealing with health complications. So we wanted to stay in North America because we knew it'd be a lot easier to get back to visit him in Ontario if we needed to. So for those first couple of years, we were all over the North America. Coast to coast, south to north, back and forth across Canada a couple times, back and forth across the States a couple times, just slow traveling the most part, staying on people's couches, camping every once in a while. I'm more of a glamper, so that didn't happen a lot. You know, it's just wonderful. And I was doing some stuff on the side initially while I was still working in my previous career. And that I started to focus on more, which started to develop more of an income. So it provided us a little bit more confidence that we could sustain this new vision because we didn't have a lot of savings. Wasn't like I had this massive amount of money and I was retiring, far from it. And people just presume, oh, you guys must just have a lot of independent wealth to be able to do this. And I was like, no way. But we also both knew that we were very employable. And worst case scenario, if we couldn't make it work, we go home. We have family that loves us, that will put us up. We'll find new careers. Everything will be okay. We had to acknowledge that. Like, what was our biggest fear or concern of making this choice? Were we being rash? I didn't want to be the guy 15 years down the road saying to my wife, remember that time when we thought about making these big shifts and going and doing those things with our family while they actually thought we were cool still, meaning my kids, you know, that window closed pretty quick. They're 16 and 18 now, and I can tell it's closing. And I didn't want to have that conversation, Sue. I didn't want to be that person.
And you decided to go off to Bali, yes?
Yeah. My father, as I said, was ill. He eventually progressed into pancreatic cancer. But this is interesting. I'm not someone that gets into the whole woo-woo thing. Mm-hmm. But things I do truly believe happen for a reason. When you're closing a door somewhere, new doors open. Yeah. And because of this shift that we made in our lifestyle, to become location independent, to be able to be a full-time fam, to travel, to just live life a little bit differently. When my dad became ill, we had the opportunity to then move back to Ontario and spend 6 months there during that end of life phase.
Wow.
I would not have had that ability had I stayed on the path that I was on.
No.
So it was after he passed though, 2 months after that, we were like, okay, we can go overseas.
Yeah.
So we went to Bali. And full disclosure here for anybody that's considering going to Bali, be warned, you might get there. And you might not leave. So that happened to me and our family. We were there for 2 years and a bit. Yeah.
Just beautiful. But you did leave. You got back to Canada.
Yeah. My kids wanted to finish high school here. And we'd always let them know that at any time they could play that card.
Nice.
But they wanted to come back. And sure enough, they played the card as they were getting older. And, you know, they wanted to come finish school here. So we honored that. And it was a great choice because it happened right before COVID. Whoa. 8 weeks after I got back to Canada, lockdown happened. I was like, crazy. Again, interesting how things work out.
Well, not going woo-woo, but it is so interesting. My goodness, that's incredible. Then we got stuck in.
Well, think about the TEDx experience that we had. It was a very unique experience. I mean, most of those times, those training sessions that we were a part of, those biweekly calls, those would have been in person. I think about how they shifted, but they made it work and it worked wonderful.
Yes, it's true. We're getting much more used to this whole Zoom thing and meeting people like that. And now, Di, I'm mindful of your time and we could do this forever. So where do you see your work going in the future? Do you have more goals? What would you like to leave the listeners with?
Wow. Just a little question there. Just narrow it down. Well, I have to be honest with you, Sue, like this last couple of months, it's weird, right? Like I was so focused. I mean, you know, that TEDx experience was almost 7 months from the time we applied to the time we stood on that red dot was about 7 months.
Yeah.
That consumes so much of my mental space and my energy. After it ended, I was just like coming down from an extreme high.
Yeah.
I definitely felt like I crashed. So there's been some challenges there just with me from a mental health standpoint. And I read a wonderful article. I think it might've been the Washington Post or the New York Times, but they talked about this emerging sort of what they coined as languishing.
That's a nice word. And
I thought it was really interesting how they positioned, but they were just saying that there's based on the year that we've had with the lack of travel, the lack of opportunity for in-person connection, our communities, our hobbies, a lot of things have been compromised based on the world's situation with this global pandemic. And so they started to say, there's a lot of these people that if you look at their life and everything that's in it, it all looks awesome, but there's just not this feeling that it's awesome. And they coined it sort of languishing. And I equate it to the meh, you know, it's kind of meh. I've been feeling like that the last couple months. And now I'm finally coming out of that now. Yeah. And I'm getting my vision back on where I want to go. And as far as me, I'm leveling up some of my education. And I'm becoming a master trainer in a new emerging technique called neurochange therapy.
Oh, wow.
And it really focuses on the brain and brain science for helping people establish new belief systems or rewire the brain. And it's similar to what neurolinguistic programming was 25, 30 years ago. This is brand new, just emerging. And I'm one of the very first 5 or 6 people in Canada to be certified.
Oh,
and,
sweet.
So I'm really looking forward to that because I think it's going to really help me do more good for my clients and the people I serve. So that's a big part of what I'm doing right now. And I'm just going to keep showing up for people. That's all, you know?
Well, tell the listeners what you do, because when you said about not being able to see people in person, I know that a lot of your mentoring work is that you do all meet on a Monday evening. Is it Mentorship Monday? Is
that right? That's exactly right. Capital M-E-N, so Mentorship Mondays. Yeah, it was something that started about 3 years ago. A friend and I co-created the space. I had the idea, invited him to come, and it's just a safe space for men to come together and practice this skill called vulnerability. In a safe place, not have any concerns or fears or worries that anything shared could be used against them or shared outside of that space. And it's just a wonderful place to come and connect with other guys authentically. Yeah. There's no hidden agenda here. There's no cost to come to those. They're free for men to attend to. They're online predominantly now, but we're all looking forward to having the in-person connection again as things open up. That's a passion project. I plan to continue moving forward and grow. And I do a lot of coaching and mentorship for men and women alike and just people that feel like they're kind of stuck from a health, a wellness standpoint, a mindset standpoint. And as I say, I'm really quite good at helping people get out of their own head and more into their own heart so they can really feel more connected to their life. And when you feel connected to your life and to the things that are happening in it, watch out. You're unstoppable.
It's true. I've had this sort of funny feeling that I'm on a bit of a hamster wheel. You know, it's like get up and take the dogs out and then work and then think about lunch and then work and then think about dinner and then think about what you're going to watch on TV. And then you go to bed and then you do it all again the next time. And it's purely COVID related because the opportunities to get off the wheel are less. Yesterday I went and played golf and I felt like a new person just because I got off that wheel for a second.
Incredible. I think what you're feeling soon, what you observed yesterday and just having that one little change in the pattern, it's amazing how impactful that small little extra stimulus, because it's so different than everything else before it, right? For months on end, or for some of us, a year and a bit on end, right? So I think you're onto something. Getting back, getting reconnected to the things that just get us excited.
And I think if you ask anybody these days what they miss most is hugs. Very, very simple.
I agree.
Sounds like a good place to wind up. But Di, any last minute messages for our listeners? Because you can find Di at www.dimanuel.com.
Yes.
And it's D-A-I-M-A-N-U-E-L.
Yeah, that same name for any social media. I'm most active on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So I always invite people to reach out. I love having conversations with people. And even just connecting on social is a wonderful first way to begin that conversation. But as far as leaving with the last minute message, you know, I think Buddha said it best. This too shall pass. And when people hear that, I know for myself, I used to always think he was referring to this tough stuff that we have to work through. It's like, it's okay, grin and bear it, you know, like you'll get through this and it'll be okay. We're resilient. We will get through this. It's all going to be good. But the crazy thing is, and this is what it was taught to me by a meditation teacher I had, was Buddha actually was referring to not only the bad, but also the great stuff in our lives, that that too shall pass. So don't glance over the great things that are happening every day. Recognize that they're happening. Be grateful that they happened and live more right now, because it all passes. Mm. And it's okay. It's just our life. So if I can leave you with that, you know, this too will pass. Just appreciate those moments. Mm-hmm. I know I'm trying to do that a lot more myself too.
Well, if anybody's listening, they will be totally grateful for any moments they spend with Dai. And thank you so much for being here with us today.
Sue, thank you so much. I love what you're putting out to the world. And I still speak about your TEDx talk as well. I think it's just so amazing. I remember my mom had nothing but great things to say. She's now in her late 70s, but she was an RN for years and years. And she just really connected with what you were sharing, because she actually was raised by two deaf mutes. My grandparents were both deaf mutes. And so she struggled with learning. Obviously, she could hear and speak. And so just anything that really speaks to the learning space and the challenges, she just thought it was wonderful. And so I know a lot of people are being very much inspired by your talk. And I just want to say it was a pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. We're all just wonderful, basically.
Yay!
So thank you to everyone who's listening. Please subscribe, follow, share. And if you'd like to see what the whole Dyslexic Society is up to, go to www.wds.org. And we'd love to hear from you at info@wds.org. I hope you'll join us to hear some more speakers and more of the TEDx Bear Creek Park organizing and coaching team. So till next time, take care, stay well, and bye for now.